real estate agencies, and sexist advertising, and then the end of the march turned into a multi-hour battle royale.
Tear gas is sadly typical of how our government deals with political demonstrations. French democracy has been tarnished worldwide and appears ridiculous, as it's clearly not based on representative democracy.
Over 2 million people marched nationwide as unions declared May Day the 13th major day of protest this year against a 2-year hike to the pension age, which was rammed into law by executive decree last month. The undemocratic proclamation of the law, combined with the shocking police brutality, had many French people questioning their country's democratic bona fides.
France allows for demonstrations, but the problem is that police don't allow it. We saw that with the yellow vests, and we have seen it again from the very start of the pension protests this year.
Macron has to stop showing such contempt for the people. As a yellow vest, I promise that we will never stop fighting for a real democracy. We want referendums and public participation, while Macron has fear for the people.
International Workers' Day began in Chicago in 1886 with the fight for an 8-hour workday. It wouldn't be implemented in the West until after their political and financial elites forced World War I, which was largely an effort to maintain monarchical privileges and to forestall socialist-inspired reforms. Protesters insist they can apply enough pressure on the president to get the unpopular law revoked, something protests also forced in 2006. Press TV's cameraman was hit by a tear gas grenade fired by police seconds before the start of a live interview from the demonstration. It appears like a clear case of police targeting media, as tear gas is normally shot high into the air. The cameraman was not badly hurt, as the projectile only exploded after it ricocheted off his leg. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
It goes under the technical name of European Stability Mechanism, or ESM. It is the Eurozone bailout fund designed to help euro area countries in severe financial distress. The first ESM version was devised in 2012 following Greece's default on its own bonds, which brought the Eurozone at risk of breaking apart, with economic instability spreading across the old continent. As Europe faces several challenges to stay afloat, the European Union must devise mechanisms to balance its member states economically. The European Stability Mechanism is a rescue fund for EU member countries that have lost or risk losing market access. In practical terms, it grants conditional financial assistance to states that are on the verge of bankruptcy to mitigate the contagion risks in the bloc.
We, of course, need to remain vigilant. Economic uncertainty remains high and we face numerous headwinds. Events in the US support the EU's choice to apply the Basel Prudential Standards to all our banks, not just the largest one.
In early 2021, the European Commission and all members of the bloc signed a new agreement amending the previous ESM in a way that it prevents small crises from escalating. On Friday, European Economy Commissioner Paolo Gentiloni called on Rome to stop dragging its heels over ratification of the reform. As of today, all EU member countries have ratified the reform, except Italy.
By holding out on ratifying the reform, Italy is maybe attempting to fetch a better deal on the upcoming reform of the EU's central fiscal rules. Some are even suggesting that parties in Italy's ruling coalition are caught in some sort of political skirmishes over this issue.
On several occasions, Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has criticized the ESM reform, arguing that the bailout funds should be used also as a vehicle for growth. Some time ago, the leader of one of the right-leaning coalition government's parties, the League's Matteo Salvini, said that approving the ESM changes would mean the ruining of lives for millions of Italians and the end of Italy's national sovereignty on budget issues.
Creating wealth to tackle poverty is our top priority, as Italy has already sold many of its strategic assets and made a huge amount of debt. We must focus on investing now.
While Brussels is urging Italy's approval of the European Stability Mechanism, the examination of the bills for its ratification has been at a standstill in the Italian Parliament for almost a month. Max Civili, Rome.
The Taliban-led Foreign Ministry of Afghanistan on Friday reacted to a recent UN resolution slamming the Taliban's decision to bar local women from working for the United Nations, saying this is an internal social matter of Afghanistan that has nothing to do with foreign states. The Taliban statement said they remain committed to ensuring rights of Afghan women and stressed that diversity must be respected and not be politicized. Afghan women rights activists and experts said the ruling Taliban need to engage with the international community on the matter and also listen to the words of the Afghan people on such issues.
Since Afghanistan is a member of the UN and given the current economic and humanitarian situation, the Taliban need to engage with the international community and take the issue seriously. When they say the issue of Afghan women is an internal matter, they must listen to what Afghans say. They should be open to ordinary Afghans, elites, impartial advocates, and clerics. Such steps are for the better of both Taliban and the Afghan people.
The Afghan people said the global community and the Taliban should reach an agreement over the matter that best serves the rights and interests of Afghans.
Our demands from the Taliban and the international community is to uphold the rights of women. We expect the issue of Afghan women not to be politicized. Afghan people also need a good economy, health care and education. The Taliban and global community should work closer to address all needs of Afghans, joining hands on the benefit of Afghans.
The UN Security Council approved a resolution Thursday calling on Afghanistan's Taliban rulers to swiftly reverse their restrictions on women and girls. The UN is also reviewing its presence in Afghanistan following the Taliban's ban on female UN workers in the war-torn country. Afghan people are in a dire situation as they struggle with humanitarian and economic crisis. They are appealing to both the Taliban and the global community to help ease their conditions and protect their rights. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Ancient maps and antique atlases on view. The collection of maps that date back to 500 BC illustrates how the name of the Persian Gulf has stayed the same through the ages.
One of the most important issues in Iranology is the names of different parts of Iran and how they have changed since antiquity. And the name of the Persian Gulf is also part of our studies and among the most important topics of research. As you can see in all of these historic maps that date back to 500 BC, many names have changed, but the name of the Persian Gulf, or Sinus Persicus, has remained the same.
This extensive collection of 200 ancient maps and atlases was recently archived by the Iranology Foundation. On the occasion of National Persian Gulf Day, the foundation curated this public exhibition not just for enthusiasts and researchers, but also for the education of the younger generation.
On the occasion of Persian Gulf Day, we decided to share our maps and atlases that contain a treasure trove of information about Iran and the Persian Gulf. We've invited university students and researchers, and we've also held workshops to inform visitors about the region, its name, and the culture of its peoples.
All the maps pertaining to the Islamic Golden Age refer to the body of water in the south of Iran as Sinus Persicus, or the Persian Gulf. The name even appears in the oldest map here, a copy of Claudius Ptolemy's world map based on the description contained in his Book of Geography, one of the earliest surviving manuscripts.
April 30th, which is National Persian Gulf Day on the Iranian calendar, is a reminder that the country is steadfast in protecting its interests, and it will also stand firm against any threats to its sovereignty. Gisum Shahmadi, Tehran.
Ever since President Emmanuel Macron forced through a 2-year hike to the pension age by decree, neither he nor his ministers can hold public gatherings without protesters drowning out their voices by banging pots and pans. The pan banging has become a public relations nightmare for the ruling politicians, as their every appearance now includes a disruptive and unmistakable reminder of approval ratings which have dropped to near the Yellow Vest era all-time lows.
We know this type of protest is effective because they are constantly getting repressed by police and local mayors. It's clear that mass protests haven't been enough. These casserole pan protests are easy to organize and show how deaf the government is to the people's wishes.
The new form of protest is occurring almost daily and is having a major impact. Citing pension rollback protests as a cause, French government debt was just downgraded by a top global ratings agency. The prime minister told her cabinet to restrict their public appearances to only the necessities. That means government work is being slowed down. But the protesters say that only a total stop to implementing the pension age hike will end the so-called casserole pan protests.
The president and his ministers think that the pension rollback is all wrapped up, but he is finding out that this is not the case. Macron is here at the French football club, but we're here with our casserole pans and our whistles to give him a red card. We will be making noise until he revokes the law.
Huge nationwide demonstrations, along with the usual police repression, are expected on May 1st, International Workers' Day. But the real question is if the protests will continue and be able to force the revocation of an already enacted law, as was the case in 2006.
Words like doubt, fatigue, and depression are being used to describe Macron and his ministers. Macron just wrapped up his 6th year in office, but his next 4 years may be the type of ringing success which no politician would want to hear. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Leaders' sermon and meeting with ambassadors of Islamic countries on the occasion of the Eid al-Fitr. On Saturday, 22nd of April 2023, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, led the prayers and delivered a sermon on the auspicious occasion of the Eid al-Fitr, marking the end of the blessed fasting month of Ramadan. He also had a meeting with top government officials and ambassadors of Islamic countries at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya in Tehran after the Eid al-Fitr prayers. In this program, we discussed the leader's Eid al-Fitr sermon and his points of view expressed at the meeting with senior officials and ambassadors of Islamic countries. Please stay with us. With participation of million-strong crowds, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, led the Eid al-Fitr prayers at Imam Khomeini's Musalla in Tehran. After congratulating the Islamic Ummah and the great Iranian nation on the occasion of the Eid al-Fitr, the leader referred to some prominent points with regards to this year's Ramadan, such as recitation of the Holy Quran, all-night prayers and worship, on the Knights of Power or the Knights of Providence, the Knights of Qadr. And people's assistance and charitable donations to the poor, the less well-off, and the orphans. Ayatollah Khamenei emphasized that helping the poor is one of the most important duties of the public during the blessed month of Ramadan. Referring to the well-attended and enthusiastic International Quds Day rallies and marches as divine blessings, Ayatollah Khamenei stressed that Ramadan is the month of jihad and that two important events in early Islamic history, namely the conquest of Mecca and the Battle of Badr, both occurred during the blessed month of Ramadan. Commenting further on International Quds Day, the leader praised anti-Zionist rallies and marches in many countries throughout the world and said the fruits of Ramadan, namely proximity to God Almighty, kindness and generosity, cleansing of the soul, and paying more attention to spiritual matters are all very worthy and should be preserved as much as possible. In further remarks, the leader said, one of the great benefits of fasting during the month of Ramadan is that one's determination is greatly strengthened. The Lord Most High has provided human beings with determination to be used as a tool for movement, for advancement, and for progress. Fasting strengthens one's determination, and this is the key to removing and overcoming obstacles to progress. Offering advice to senior government officials, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei urged officials to be sympathetic to one another, to cooperate closely with each other, saying this is essential for efficient running of the country. He also urged people to maintain their unity. He poignantly remarked, "The enemies do not want to see a united Iranian nation, a nation which speaks with one voice. Rather, the enemies want to see us divided. It is extremely important that we are kind towards each other and be respectful towards one another, despite the fact that naturally there are many different points of views and opinions within the Iranian nation. Such kindness and respect will dash enemy hopes of sowing division and discord." Turning to the new tactics of imperialists and colonialists, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei pointedly said, "The military option did not make much headway in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Americans experienced defeat in both of those countries. This is why they have adopted new tactics now. Their stratagem now relies on lies and deceit, media campaigns and media wars and propaganda, belittling independent nations, promoting pessimism and cynicism, dividing nations and pitting people against one another. This is their tactic now. But the Iranian nation is vigilant and aware. We have defeated the enemy up to today, and with God's grace, we shall defeat the enemy tomorrow as well." The leader also met with senior Iranian officials and ambassadors of Islamic countries at the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniyeh in Tehran after the Eid al-Fitr prayers. The leader said, "I would like to congratulate the Islamic Ummah, the Iranian people, the heads of the three branches of the Iranian government, and the ambassadors and representatives of Islamic countries on the auspicious occasion of the Eid al-Fitr." Ayatollah Khamenei added, "The month of Ramadan provides the environment for hearts to become closer to each other. All of the various dimensions of the month of Ramadan help to bring the hearts of people closer to one another, both within the country and within the entire Islamic Ummah. First of all, the tenderness that is created in people by their fasting, prayers and supplications, and recitation of the Holy Quran is itself a source for bringing hearts closer together. And piety brings hearts closer, just as President pointed out in his statements. The leader said, "Our problem today is division, even though the Holy Quran prohibits division." The Holy Quran says, "Do not be like those who become divided into sects and differed." And it commands us to be united. Hold fast altogether to Allah's cord and do not be divided into sects. The leader added, "Unfortunately, members of the Islamic Ummah are divided. Yes, there are different opinions, there are different sects, and there are different tastes. That's fine. But these differences must not mean that we should be deprived of the great blessing of the Islamic nation being united. If the Islamic Ummah, which consists of about 2 billion people, who are scattered in the most important sensitive geographical areas of the world, if they are united today, Islamic countries would receive more blessings, far more blessings. If this unity is established to any extent, the solution to the problems of the Islamic world will become apparent. The first steps will become apparent and will be possible for us to solve the problems of the Islamic world." In further remarks, the leader turned to the issue of Palestine, one of the most fundamental issues facing the Islamic world today. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "Praise God, today we are witnessing the gradual decline of the usurper Zionist regime of Israel. Everyone in the world is seeing this. The usurper Zionist regime is gradually declining, and the rate of its decline is accelerating in recent years. This decline started some years ago, but the rate of decline has accelerated recently, and this is a big opportunity for the Islamic Ummah. The Palestinian issue is not just an Islamic issue, it is a humanitarian issue. If anyone in the world, regardless of whether they are Muslim or not, knows the reality of the events in Palestine, they will confront the usurper Zionist regime. Some of the crimes committed by this usurper regime and some of the catastrophes that have created have become apparent to world public opinion this year. You saw how the people's gatherings and rallies and marches on International Quds Day were no longer limited to the Islamic world. Many people outside of the Islamic world, in Europe and in the United States itself, also took part in rallies and marches in support of the Palestinians on the last Friday of the blessed month of Ramadan, the International Quds Day. This is how it is. The Palestinian issue is a humanitarian issue. But why has it become like this? It's because the Palestinian people's resistance, the internal resistance of the Palestinians, is the main reason for their progress. The more this resistance increases, the weaker the Zionist regime becomes, and the more its disastrous situation can be seen. The desperate situation that the Zionist regime is in today, the Zionist regime's current situation is truly deplorable, is due to the steadfastness of young Palestinians. Young Palestinians are accepting the hardships and the dangers. In the occupied city of Al-Quds, we see a large gathering of people taking part in spiritual retreats. The young people in different cities of the occupied West Bank stand in front of the armed, vicious Zionist soldiers. They make sacrifices and they move forward. They have moved forward up until now, and God willing, they will continue to do so in the future. Elsewhere in his remarks, Ayatollah Khamenei said, I believe the Zionist regime's power of deterrence is coming to an end. This is what David Ben-Gurion, one of the main founders of the Zionist regime and a former prime minister of the Zionist regime, had warned decades ago, perhaps 60 years ago. Ben-Gurion said the Israeli regime would start to have problems whenever its power of deterrence ended. Today, their power of deterrence has finished, or is near its end. They know and realize this themselves, that their collapse is near. This is due to the blessing of the resistance front. This is due to the blessing of the Palestinian youth, who have been instrumental in weakening the Zionist regime. So what should be the Islamic world's strategy with regards to the issue of Palestine? Today, the Islamic world's strategy regarding Palestine should be to help the forces inside that country. The resistance front's endeavors are, of course, valuable, wherever they are. Just like us, we too are standing up for the Palestinians. The resistance front's endeavors are valuable. These efforts should be focused on strengthening those who are fighting and risking their lives inside of Palestine. The last point I want to make is the following. We need to truly pay attention to this point. What is the reason for the escalation of the internal struggles in Palestine? It is because of the inclination towards Islam. We had seen what their situation was like before. Back when Islamic tendencies weren't popular among Palestinian groups, now some were communists, others were not, but they weren't Islamic. These developments did not exist. From the time that Islamic tendencies were born in the Palestinian resistance fighters, and from the time this tendency increased on a daily basis, progress has been made in the manner, in the way the Palestinians are fighting the Zionist regime. So the reason for the Palestinian people's success is Islam. Islam and the enemy has realized this. That's why we see them working against Islam around the world. They're engaging in fighting Islam, doing all kinds of things. Of course, their fight against Islam will get nowhere. Do they seek to outmaneuver Allah? But it is the faithless who are the ones who are outmaneuvered. This is what the Holy Quran says. They are making efforts, but the Almighty will nullify their efforts. In closing comments, the leader said, "We hope that our dear nation, our people, and our young people will see the day when Muslims from around the world can freely perform their prayers and supplications in the liberated city of Al-Quds. May God's greetings, mercy and blessings be upon you."
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Freedom or martyrdom was what Palestinian prisoner Sheikh Haider Adnan was seeking. This after once again being illegally imprisoned by the Israeli regime without a trial or charge. Adnan had been imprisoned 20 times by Israel. On Tuesday, he attained martyrdom on the 87th day of his hunger strike. His wife had warned that the Israeli regime wanted to murder him, and it had refused to free him despite his deteriorating health. On this Spotlight, we will take a look at the ramifications of his martyrdom and overall the Palestinian resistance. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Leith Malik, activist and political commentator out of Beirut. And Khalid Barakat, spokesperson, Masar Badal Movement out of Vancouver. Thank you both for being with me. Well, let's start it off in Beirut with Leith. Sheikh Haider Adnan was a well-known political prisoner and a leader in the Islamic Jihad. What does it mean that this man had to go on several hunger strikes simply to gain his freedom? However, this time it resulted in his martyrdom.
Well, clearly is an indication of how vile and inhumane the Zionist regime is. For your listeners, this was his sixth hunger strike since 2004. And the last time, of course, he was released. And every time he was arrested, he was never charged with any crimes and put under quote-unquote administrative detention. Also, for your listeners, this is the seventh Palestinian that dies on a hunger strike since 1970. And it's an indication that, of course, the Palestinian people are willing to sacrifice everything they have for their freedom. And it's also an indication of how cruel and vicious the Zionist colony is and its Western backers are.
Well, Khaled, Sheikh Adnan is the 237th Palestinian prisoner to be killed or died in Israeli jails. I mean, what does this mean that many Palestinians are dying behind Israeli bars? And what does it say about the overall conditions?
Well, basically, what it says is that Israel could carry a criminal and assassination acts against Palestinian prisoners with impunity. I mean, when we say 237 Palestinian prisoners were murdered at the hands of Israelis, we are talking about shot from a, you know, directly shot with live bullets. We are talking about killed in interrogation rooms after being tortured for weeks and months, like in the case of Muhammad al-Khawaja in 1976, or Ibrahim al-Ra'i in 1988, or Mustafa al-Akkawi in 1990. These are Palestinian leaders who were assassinated, and it's premeditated, it's organized crimes that happens while these Palestinian prisoners are in custody and under torture. Now, in the case of Sheikh Haider Adnan, Palestinians today, they feel very angry and very sad at the same time, but they are not surprised. They know that Israel have carried this, and they want to actually kill Haider Adnan. His wife have been saying this repeatedly to Palestinian and Arab media. We have invited her to speak just a couple of weeks ago, and she said that when they came to arrest him, they told her, we are going to blow his head off this time. And the same Palestinian, you know, prisoner organizations have warned that Israel is going to kill Sheikh Haider Adnan, because this time they did not arrest him based on administrative detention law, as they always have done with Sheikh Haider Adnan. This time they wanted to actually sentence him so they can either remove him from his role, the role that he plays as a national leader in the Palestinian street. So we you know, have warned that this is what Israel is trying to do. They're trying to kill him. And they did.
Very sad indeed. Well, Laith, actually, Khalid just referred to something that I wanted to bring up because, first of all, talking about a regime that can arrest and hold people without trial, the so-called administrative detention on the one hand, but even with that, they hadn't charged him yet, Khalid, because you said they wanted to charge him. They hadn't charged him yet. It almost seemed like as if there's such a sense of impunity by the Israeli regime because they can easily trump up charges. They could easily follow their big brother in Washington with that. But they didn't even bother to do that. They didn't charge him, and he was killed in jail as if they know there's not going to be any pressure against him or nothing's going to be done. Your take, Laith.
Well, it's clear indication that the quote-unquote international system that was created by the West after World War II is in total disarray. The Zionists know that they have full impunity and protection within those structures, whether it's the United Nations, the International Court of Justice, or the ICC, which are all irrelevant not only to Palestinians but to much of humanity in Asia, Africa, and Latin America. None of these systems can bring justice to the Palestinians or put Israel on trial. Therefore, the only way forward has always been for the Palestinians, armed resistance and the liberation through that struggle. And the backing of our Arab and Muslim brothers and our brothers in Africa, Asia, and Latin America will be crucial to that. We should not anymore care about whether Europeans or North Americans look at us as human or care for our feelings. We know already that they don't. So we should not be surprised. And this is something that most Palestinians in the occupied Palestine have already understood and are not waiting for the goodwill of the West. And as we see today, already Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are firing back at the Zionist colony, and we expect resistance to break out in the West Bank any minute also.
Well, Khalid, 45 years old Sheikh Khadr Adnan had spent many years behind bars, as we've been saying, and of course, this was a sixth hunger strike. He spoke for other prisoners and demanded the rights of all Palestinian prisoners and even expressed his solidarity with 30,000 prisoners in the United States who went on hunger strikes across California in 2013. It says a lot about his personality. Your thoughts overall about the Sheikh and his strong stance against oppression in general?
Actually, Sheikh Khadr Adnan have demonstrated an exceptional ethics and struggle, his day-to-day struggle. He's a simple worker, he's a baker, and he is not like someone who goes to an office. He actually is a hard-working man and a loving father. And his commitment has been always for the families of the martyrs and the prisoners, and it's well-known fact about his almost daily visits and care for these families. And in his will, when you read his will, you can, it's the only ones that he expressed his commitment to are the families of the martyrs and the prisoners and the wounded. He has always been taking positions when even it's not popular positions. And that's why he was prosecuted and tortured and arrested, not just by Israel, but also by Israel puppets in the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority. He has been imprisoned, and they even at one point of time tried to assassinate him and shot directly at him in Nablus and other cities when he goes to the funerals of martyrs or visit the families of the martyrs. Also, he have expressed his solidarity with the Lebanese communist revolutionary prisoner George Ibrahim Abdullah. We've asked him to plant a tree for George Ibrahim Abdullah, and he did. He planted olive trees for George Ibrahim Abdullah, he expressed his solidarity with political prisoners across the world, including in his speeches when he talks about freedom and dignity. He does not limit that just to the Palestinian prisoners, but he talks about it from a truly Arab and Muslim and internationalist, way. And this is a very important values in his persona, as well as his political convictions. He said that my skin and bones are being melting in this hunger strike because I am defending my dignity and my freedom. And dignity is very central, and that's why Palestinians are calling him the martyrs of national dignity and human dignity, because he truly represented that he will not submit to Zionist regime, he will not submit to Zionist torturers, he will not submit to Zionist soldiers, he will fight back and he will go all the way if martyrdom or freedom. And this is important quality in a true revolutionary Palestinians and, especially prisoners. At the same time...
Sorry to interrupt you. Let me get Lyth back in on this conversation because we're really limited time-wise. But Lyth, you heard what Khaled said, that he was defending dignity and freedom. I mean, what does it say in general that the only way for him to be free was dealing with this hunger strike? And on the other side, we look at the lack of coverage. This man was on a hunger strike for 86 days. And if we look at overall which television stations or newspapers or other outlets cover it, it's very, very limited. I mean, what does that say about the overall state of affairs in the world?
Well, clearly the Western media is now has lost any credibility and has decided to black out all the stories. Of course, the story of Ukraine is taking over much of that space in the media in the West. But Sheikh Khadr Adnan was known all around the world. I lived in Canada for 20-somewhat years, like Khalid, and I remember the posters with his face plastering the streets of Montreal during his second hunger strike. So we know that the effect of this dignity that Sheikh Khadr Adnan resembled and had a huge effect across the world. And look, the Palestinian people have chosen, have known their place in history, and they know that their struggle is a long one, and they know that the only way that they can get through is through continued resistance all the way. We cannot give the Zionists anything from what they pursue, because we are the native indigenous people of the lands. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam are ours. Those Europeans that claim to be Jews and act as Zionists, they do not represent Judaism of Moses of Egypt or the Ten Commandments. Those Christians in Europe and the United States who support Zionism do not represent Jesus of Palestine and the prophet of love and peace. And of course, Muslims who collaborate with the Zionist colony do not represent the prophet Muhammad and his religion of equality and justice. This is our weight of history on our back, and we will continue, like Sheikh Khadr Adnan, to struggle to the last day until there is no more Zionist colony and the liberation of Palestine happens.
Well, Khaled, how responsible do you see those countries who support the apartheid regime of Israel for the murder of Sheikh Khaled Adnan?
Oh, they are very responsible. In fact, they are the truly the responsible parties. Well, one is that they established Israel to become a colonialist, system and settler colonialist regime in the heart of the Arab world and the Muslim world. They founded this regime, and they kept supporting it until today to become the most advanced, regime in the area that possesses over 300 nuclear heads and a very advanced military and economic system. And who did this? It's France, Britain, the United States, Canada, and the Western colonialist powers, because they wanted to establish a colony that can serve their interest in the region and that they can demonstrate their hegemony in our region. And so Israel is really a puppet of the Western colonies, and at the same time a small partner today for some of these countries. So in short, if you talk about administrative detention, for example, this is a law that Israel inherited from the British. When they say we are putting Palestinian prisoners in detention centers and in administrative detention where they have no rights, no legal rights, no rights whatsoever without charge or trial, they inherited this law from the British time when they were colonizing Palestine. And today we see the United States continuing to pump billions and billions of dollars into Israel military and economy. France and Germany are doing Israel dirty work, but against the Palestinian communities and their supporters. We see that Germany, for example, banned Al-Quds Day, banned the Day of the Prisoners, and Al-Nakba and Al-Awda rallies in Germany. They are basically using coercion and oppressing Palestinians and Arabs and refugees on behest of Israel. And so really on that kind of relationship between imperialism and Zionism, nothing changed whatsoever. It has become even more clear for us that we're not just fighting Israel, we are fighting this imperialist and reactionary regimes of the region. This is the enemy of the Palestinian people.
Well, Liath, the Palestinian resistance groups today have launched rockets from Gaza towards the apartheid entity after the murder of Sheikh Adnan. Where do you see now the resistance going with this? Do you think that it's going to exacerbate the situation? Or your overall assessment of things right now?
Well, just less than half an hour ago, there was more missiles fired from Gaza. We know right now, since the morning, around 30 missiles were fired from Gaza. Only 4 were intercepted by the Israeli air defenses, which is an indicator that either the Palestinians in the resistance of Gaza are using more advanced missiles this time, and or that there was a major failure in the quote-unquote Iron Dome. So this will continue, of course. We heard the Palestinian resistance groups stating that this is just an initial response, that there will be a retaliation of the same caliber of the assassination of Sheikh Khadr Adnan, which means that this will be a much more protracted situation. We look at what's happening in the West Bank. Ariha, or Jericho in English, has been under siege for now 9 days. People are not allowed to leave of the city of Jericho. And the blood is boiling in the streets of the West Bank. Demonstrations were out over the night in Jenin and Nablus. So more should come out in the next few hours. And I hope, of course, that the Zionists will be deterred and not drag us all into a much wider confrontation.
Well, Khaled, hunger strikes are the tactic of resistance when there's no other way out, and to bring attention to a cause that the world tries to ignore. We started in Northern Ireland and South Africa, and now in Palestine. Do you think that Sheikh Adnan's martyrdom can ignite a change in what is happening on the ground there and create a greater awareness outside of Palestine and be actually ignition for greater resistance inside of the Palestinian territories?
This is a very important question because I think that the duties and the task that was required from the national leader, Sheikh Khadr Adnan, he have delivered them with his own soul. And so now it's up to us, the one who is still living, to turn this battle against occupation into a battle for the freedom of Palestinian prisoners, and to confront Israelis and their allies and their oppression of the Palestinian prisoners, to bring down this racist criminal law called administrative detention, where Israel can, hold Palestinians in prisons in indefinite time and without trial or charge and any legal rights. We need to put the Palestinian prisoner issue into the priority of the solidarity movement with Palestine, with our own solidarity and support work, whether as Palestinians or as international movement, especially, for example, the boycott movement against Israel. It has to uphold the Palestinian prisoners as one of its priorities. Because when we talk about the Palestinian prisoners, we are really talking about the true leadership of the Palestinian National Liberation Movement. We're talking about Palestinians who are being kept in prison because Israel actually fear their presence in their villages and camps and cities. These are the people that, as we say, their word is heard by the local communities, and they are hostages. Israel is imprisoning now over 4,900 Palestinian prisoners. These are the leaders of our unions, our student movement, our woman movement, labor movement. These are the Palestinian workers and doctors and engineers are being held in Israeli prisons. And we need to also look a little bit at the Palestinian responsibility itself. Today, for example, why Khadr Adnan issue was not highlighted in the United Nations, for example. Not that I trust the United Nations, but even on that level, the reason is because the Palestinian Authority are in full control of the Palestinian institutions. They confiscate all Palestinian institutions, whether Palestinians, the PLO, or whether the Palestinian embassies, or whether Palestinian missions. It's under the full control of this class that act and behave like puppets for the Israelis. And so